Thank you. So I'm on the second handout, A Vision for Children's and Youth Ministry, Les Graphs. Great. Everyone got one? I'll go. You haven't got one? I've got some spares here. Nick, could you just walk to the back? Thanks. Okay. I'm just going to run through some principles that I think are the beginnings of a practical outworking of what we've been looking at. Okay, here's the first one. We equip and partner with parents for discipling their children. We equip and partner with parents to disciple their children. Among Anglicans, I'm not focusing on them, who say that religion is very important in their lives, only 36% listed religious faith as an especially important quality that children can be encouraged to learn at home, compared to good manners, 94%, or tolerance or respect. So the question was asked, are we reconfiguring to say it's not about children's and youth work or church, but family? I do want to firmly say it is about both. Perhaps you could say, who is the pastor, who is the minister of children? Mum and dad. That is true biblically, that is true developmentally, that is true statistically. It is what the Bible says, it is happening. Children look to their parents for their influence. Who is the minister of the parents? The church minister. When parents find themselves with a child in their arms, there is no USB stick to insert in their ear to give them parenting. It honestly came as a huge surprise to me to discover my wife didn't innately understand how to be a mother. I found that out sadly after our first child was born, and it now feels stupid to say it, but parents don't know how to be parents, and parents don't know how to be Christian parents. So our job as church leadership is to equip and partner with parents for discipling their children. And if nothing else, that statistic must be 100%. Does every parent in your church know that their primary responsibility in life is to raise children who knows Christ? They'll never have a more significant ministry. They'll never have a greater chance to do ministry than their own children. Of parents generally, despite 85% of Christian parents believing they are primarily responsible for their child's spiritual development, they also genuinely believe the church is better placed than they are to actually do it. Now that is a feeling I'm sure we can relate to. Parents know they're responsible for raising their kids to know Christ, responsible in the sense of influencing them. But yet they take three steps back as they get nearer to a church. And maybe the church is here. The fact you are here says a lot about what you are passionate about. You have an interest in children's and youth work. And I would imagine most of your churches, your children's and youth work is so good, many parents' instinct is to quietly step further back because you're doing such a good job. And I can say that when I was younger, when a parent used to say to me, Ed, you're doing such a good job, I just don't know what to say to my kids. I'd quietly say, yes, I'm winning, and now I feel ashamed. I should be saying, let's sit down then. Let's work out how I can help. Let's work out where you're stuck. Let's work out who you can read the Bible with. Let's work out how your small group leader can help with that. Not to, you know, as patronizing as I've just said it, but you're doing it. Keep doing it. Next principle. We disciple children from their earliest days and we never stop. I think we've said that, but maybe it's just a mental shift, just a decision. I wonder how this affects creche. I wonder how this affects the person who's running creche. I wonder if they know how valuable their job is. I wonder if they know that they are influencing the mums and the dads who don't know their left hand from their right. Discipleship of children employs the same biblical principles as for adults. That must be a conviction. It must be, if we believe the Bible works in England as the way it does in Scotland, or the way it does in Australia, or the way it does in France, it must also be true that the way it works with a 4-year-old is the way it works with an 80-year-old. Sydney Diocese, you know, is relatively full of Bible-believing Christians. They've done a lot of work to understand why is it we're teaching our children, young people, the Bible, but they're not Christians as adults. They were frightened by the way it was going. They'd had 20 years of faithful Bible teaching in Sydney. They weren't seeing the fruit of that in their 20s. They looked at some research to understand it. And I just want to say, I'm going to show you some principles, and every one of them you can say, well, that's the Bible. First of all, they found you need a unified ministry theology and a philosophy. The children's work, the youth work, the adult work, the student work, the women's work, the men's work, the elderly work needs to be going the same way with the Bible and the same way with unity, direction, team, vision. We need a coherence. I thought as a kids worker, if I wasn't in coherence, in line with my senior minister, it would have been a miserable job. Parents coming to me saying, Ed, I love what you're saying. My kids are so excited. Why don't we get that from our minister? In line, doing the same thing, teaching the same thing. Second principle, discipling and disciple making for life. We tell children Jesus Christ is the way, the truth and the life. And then we tell them, go and make disciples of all nations. We say that to our four-year-olds like we say that to our 50-year-olds. I remember the Sunday lunch when I was having lunch with a family. I was just married. I didn't have any children. The family, godly family, told me a story of their five-year-old that week had tag-teamed with the vicar's five-year-old, had cornered a boy. Two five-year-old girls had cornered a boy in the class at school, held up their finger and said to this boy, if you don't start trusting Jesus, you're going to hell. And I breathed deeply, sat in silence, wide-eyed at the Sunday lunch table, honestly thinking they're about to say, so we said to her, you must never say that again. That's what I thought they were going to say. I also thought, you must be thinking, why did we come to such a weird church where our kids turn out like this? They said, the next thing they said to me, was a huge part in deciding to become a kids worker, Ed, they've taken the call to make disciples seriously. They want to be evangelists. They don't know how to do it. Our job is to help them work out how to do it better. That absolutely floored me. Absolutely floored me. What godly parents. Discipling and disciple making for life. That is what we do with our children and young people. Parenting partnership is necessary. Parenting partnership is necessary. They found that they need to help parents to raise their kids to know Christ. It wasn't enough if the vicar has got a theology degree and is a great preacher. That is not enough for the children of the church. The minister, maybe in every sermon, the thought goes through the minister's mind, I wonder what the application is to a parent. Have I done enough in my sermon so that a parent could go home at lunchtime and say to their kids, can I tell you what I learnt today? Can I tell you what I didn't understand? So that the children know doubt, not understanding, that's okay. We work through that with Christ. Does a child hear their parent learning? Does a child hear their parent praying? Does a child hear their parent singing? Does a child hear their parent confused? Does a child hear their parent saying, I don't get what Jesus is doing in our family? Parent partnership is necessary. Intergenerational over multi-generational relationships. That sounds like youth work gobbledygook. Can I just say what that means? It's not enough to have people of different ages in a church. That's multi-generational. Intergenerational means when the kid of 14 walks into church, there are six people who know his name and know what's making him sad at the moment. He has a grandfather in the church of 80. He has an aunt in the church of 40. He has a big brother in the church of 16. He has a little sister in the church of 7. He has a best friend of the church of 16. So that when the person comes into church, he gets what we see, which is, this is my family. And I would die for this group of people, and they would die for me. That is normal church. The issue this survey is saying, our young people and children don't feel it. It's not their experience. Equip, manage and prepare for transition. We get, when an 18-year-old goes to university, we have to phone up our mate in Liverpool and say, can you tell me what church he should go to? Can you give me the name of someone? They need to visit him. He's feckless. He can't change his pants on time. You need to get him to church. We get that part. This is saying, when they go from 5 to 6 and start going to primary school, there's a transition, and they move into Sunday school and that scares them. When they go from 11 to 12 and they change secondary school, it scares them that they're changing their youth group club. It means that the guests who are coming along with our year 6 kids don't automatically come along with our year 7 kids. They don't know that they belong still, even because they're not at the same school. So care taken for transitions. Children are transitioned from one group to the next. Their leaders transition with them. Their parents understand the transition. All of that. So we look at that, and I just want to say that list, none of you are surprised by an item on that list. None of you are saying, right, that's the thing that's new. Wow. That is just, how do we care for people? How do we teach in the Bible so that life is equipped? Discipleship of children employs the same biblical principles as for adults. We must not ignore the high ratios of leaders needed. So there is an issue that these are the ratios, best practice, I've put on the board. These are in your safeguarding documents, I'm sure. 0 to 2 need a ratio of 1 to 3. 2 to 3 need a ratio of 1 to 4. And 3 to 8s, and probably above, it's about 1 to 8. So that just means your children's work is often the largest ministry team in the church. So if that's the case, how can we recruit people for ministry if that's what we're saying children's and youth work is? How do we recruit people to disciple children and young people rather than there's a gap in our rota, if you have a pulse, you're the person for me? How do we train that people? Indeed, who are the trainers? Who are the trainers to train them? And if your answer is you, then think again. Who is the most gifted individual on the team who you could say, will you be a team leader? And I will take 3 team leaders once a month to train you so you can be trainers of others. Because you are ranchers and not cowboys and cowgirls. How can this army be recruited, trained and encouraged? Does everyone who is with children and young people, have they been told how valuable their job is? Have they been told how significant it is that they have the courage to talk to parents afterwards to say, you'll never guess the question your child asked. You'll never guess the prayer they prayed. You'll never guess what they told me about your family. They'll never guess the encouragement they said. We can use the many opportunities for evangelism. So we've talked about some of those opportunities for evangelism. They come culturally. Because when you have children, you can no longer travel across the country to where your mum and dad live, your uni mates live. You now only can get 100 yards from your front door before you realise you've forgotten the nappy. So suddenly you need a friend in your road, where before you needed a friend in your country. We've seen how from the earliest they can learn the most. So there are opportunities, particularly with the youngest families. I took a picture of a dads and toddlers group. I remember the Saturday we started our first dads and toddlers group. I was in one of the 3 Christian men who were setting it up. I genuinely thought no one would come. We didn't know how to do it, so we bought newspapers because we thought men might read a newspaper. We had bacon sandwiches instead of cake, and we said we'd run races because we didn't know what a men's toddler group would look like. 16 men came. We didn't know any of them because their wife said, "You're going." So they came. 16 men came on the first Saturday, and the 3 of us knew none of them. There isn't another men's ministry that could do that. That's nuts. We can use the many opportunities for evangelism. And to be clear, this is not saying you should set up a dads and toddlers group. I think the outcome of today is you could make one change. You could make one change. If you think you can make more than one, in the next year, you know this. It'll be hard to implement. So the question that you'll get to discuss with the person next year is what might the one change be? What could the one idea be? Who is the one person who could lead an initiative? A children's youth families worker can't fix the ministry, but they can lead it. So I've been talking to some of you today. Perhaps 5 years ago, there were lots of adverts for children's and youth ministers. Now there's lots of adverts for families ministers. They are needed and they can lead. But the temptation when a children's worker, youth worker, family worker arrives is everyone else who's been involved in that ministry takes 6 steps back. Or that person thinks everything sits with them. This person, perhaps more than any other member of church staff, has to be a trainer of others, a leader of others. Because the ratios dictate, whereas a vicar could speak to a whole congregation in one go, the person in charge of kids and youth work, because of the ratios, can't teach everyone in one go. More than any other, they have to be a trainer before they're the implementer. So the church that phoned me and said, we have lost 2 children's workers in the last year off with stress and anxiety, who then, I asked them, how did they choose the individual? They said, we chose the best Sunday school teacher we could find. But the person found out after 2 months they were almost never teaching a Sunday school class. They were training Sunday school leaders, and that wasn't their skill set or their passion. It's a common story. This is Ephesians 4, you know it well, 11 to 13. So Christ himself gave the Bible teachers, the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors and teachers, to equip his people for works of service. So the body of Christ may be built up until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. So Christ gave some Bible teachers to be youth and children's workers to equip his people for works of service, to equip the parents to do the works of service in their families. There has to be a cascade, not between Bible teachers to people receiving the Bible teaching, but Bible teachers to equip the people to go out and do ministry. And that is the case in children's and youth work, particularly perhaps, because there is an army that needs to be equipped. And the job of the families minister could be to minister to families on the understanding they're equipping families to do service. And just to say, I think one outcome of that is, can we help that person to create an atmosphere in the church where they're not made to feel like they are the only one who is recruiting and training? So my experience of a children's worker can be people what see me coming because I need to recruit the largest team to make children's and youth work happen. So when I say, can we meet for a coffee? He says, no, I don't want to help with children's and youth work. I'm saving you the time. Whereas if I get to meet with that bloke for a coffee and say the outcome of this conversation is not you do children's ministry, it's that you leave here deciding what ministry you will do. In other words, in our church, we are all going to serve. Ideally, we are all going to be teaching the Bible in an appropriate way. I'm just the one sat here who's arguing that children's ministry is the best place to start teaching the Bible. Adults won't laugh. Children will fall asleep if you're boring, and that's such helpful feedback. You can do children's ministry with me for 2 years, and I'll teach you to teach the Bible so they stay engaged the whole time, and every adult Bible study you ever lead will thank me for the rest of your life because they're too polite to lie down and fall asleep during your Bible studies. So to create a culture where in the church the minister is saying this is what we are all about, and there is one poor individual who has to recruit more than the others to do that. Before we go on, why don't you turn to your neighbour and start this conversation of what is the one idea, what is the one thought, what is the one place to go next with this, and then we'll get more, even more practical. But that might be a good place to start. Turn to your neighbour, wherever you got to. Okay. Thoughts, insights, questions, complaints, confusions, moments of insight. No. Yes.
Interesting model that you highlighted about Bible teachers training, identifying trainers that then work with trained teams or team leaders.
Yes.
And so on.
Yes.
Putting that into the earthy level.
Yes.
In multi-generational rather than intergenerational churches.
Yes.
Where we have the eager beavers, but they're elderly.
Yes.
Fragile.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Yep.
And we don't have a children's and youth worker.
Okay.
Are you suggesting that the pastor teachers act that role of training?
Thank you.
Can you just
clarify? Great. So the question of team leaders. So I think I'm arguing that if you have, you normally have to split up your children's and youth work at least into four groups. Under twos, twos to fives, fives to 11s, 11s to 18s. You know, even if you had sort of 7, 8 children, you'd have to start to do that to stop 18-year-olds treading on 1-year-olds. So you quite quickly end up with teams. You don't need to be a large church before you end up with teams, or at least a rota. And I'm saying that rota needs some level of recruitment, encouragement and training. So therefore, a place to start is to look at that group of people and us as church leaders to ask ourselves, is there one person we could imagine taking responsibility for that group? I don't think age is the crucial issue. I think godliness and normally the confidence. So I'm looking for someone who could invite the team around their kitchen table, give them a spaghetti bolognese, perhaps invite you to come once a year, once a term, to tell them from the Bible why their job is so important. Then that person goes around the table and says, can you each tell me one point of encouragement and one prayer point for our prayers, so that we are then focused in on, this is a spiritual work, so we're going to talk spiritually about it. And maybe 10 or 20 minutes of, I've been in some of your classes and I think we could all do this one thing a bit better. Or even, we're going to agree what we're going to do, so each week the children come in and they know what to expect. That is, when I say team leader, that is what I mean. Is because the numbers dictate, the people in this room probably can't be the trainer, the recruiter, the encourager. Now, does that answer your question?
It goes some way, yeah. It's the variation and the reality of not necessarily having layers of
yes.
leaders and greater responsibility yep. on the Bible teachers to do that. Training.
Great. So I think that role of team leader, for most people, as you are saying, they feel that 10 times more. I'm not a team leader. I've not got X, Y, Z. And so for us to be saying to that team leader, can I tell you what it means? It means you love your leaders. You are the person that probably has the confidence to go out into the congregation, talk to the parents about their child when the leader might not have that confidence. In other words, you love people enough to have some awkward conversations. You have the confidence to just put them around your table and say, look, someone is going to have to encourage them. I'm happy for it to be me. I think of an elder's wife who would always come to me and say, Ed, that parent isn't happy. That child isn't happy. That isn't working. This leader doesn't. And I cannot tell you how grateful I am to that elder's wife. She totally got everything about ministry. She wanted me to do some weird emails and whatnot, but she was doing the thing that mattered most. And for those people to know, many in our congregations would say, of course I'm going to do that. That's being a Christian. Well, thank you for doing it. Keep doing that. Yes. Thank you. Thanks. Great. I thank you. So the question is, how do we set this vision that parents are the spiritual care of their children? I think it's multi-layered. I do think the first thing is, I'm sure all of you agree it starts in the pulpit. So for this to be a message that comes out of the Bible, both in parents, the Bible says you're responsible, but also just in application. You know, parents, you know, I'm not going to go through the topics, but so many topics you're going to preach through, our children and young people are in confusion about these topics. And the job of the Bible teacher is to help unravel that. But we can't assume that parents can work from, you are telling me how it applies to my life, to me having an idea what the conversation will look like when my child stamps her foot and says, I don't want to do this. This is weird. You know, that conversation is hard. So I think it starts there, which is we just do our best to give them the words to use, the language to use. That's one level. I think the other level is I think whenever we are running an event, whenever we are starting a ministry, whenever we're starting a year, to explain to people at the beginning of the calendar year, perhaps, can I tell you what Sunday school is? That sounds like an odd thing, but the reason we run Sunday school is children matter. And we want them in this church. We want them to grow up loving Jesus. We only have them an hour of the week. You have them for 40 hours a week. So why are you running your club for 8s to 11s? Why are you running your youth group? What is the goal of the youth group? To invite their mates to it. I think all of this is to ask ourselves a question, why do we do anything? And at some point in the year, to help parents to get this framework all fits within, we're caring for children. A parents' evening, a parenting evening, both of them, they're different, but that isn't the next layer down, which is things we practically do to equip parents. But I think the key part of your question was, how do we give them a vision? I think that vision is the same. It comes from the Bible, comes from the pulpit, comes from discipling, which is the same place the vision for the Christian life comes from. Okay. Other questions? Yep. Yes.
So first is something that I found helpful. The second thing, a question. So the first thing is, just on that parenting evening thing, so I'm aware of where there's just a very, once a year, there's just one evening where parents are encouraged to come together, yes, and it's a bit of input and really talking through this stuff.
Yes.
And doing that every year.
Yes.
Keeps it constant on the agenda, but it's,
yes,
not, it's not a big ask for the minister.
Yeah.
If they're doing that.
Yeah.
But the second thing is a question was, could you tell us a little bit about how to better foster this intergenerational,
yeah,
feel,
yeah,
church-like? How do,
yeah,
we help the kids and young people to feel,
okay,
they really are very much a part of the church,
yeah,
rather than a sort of add-on?
Okay, thank you. So how do we foster a more intergenerational approach? I think you could ask the question, the family who are new to church, who believe they're coming as consumers, like they'd go to the cinema. I'm going to come and sit in my row. I don't have to pay for my ticket. That's a bonus. Something happens to me. I sing a bit. I walk out. You know, we want to move that family's thinking to a model of church family, which is their greatest, best support network in life. Now, that change of thinking is exactly the same we'd love our children and young people to get. So some ingredients of that is we have to start by building relationships. We have to invite people into our lives. Our most godly families will be inviting others into their home. Do you know, they'll be taking the grandparents into the Sunday lunch. They'll be bringing the aunts and uncles, the single mum, the single women, the single men to be uncles and aunts. They'll be bringing other families in to be the little brothers and sisters. So the best of us will know how to do that and might model it for others, and that might start a culture. I think it's also things like, when can we start getting people to serve? Can our young people start teaching in Sunday school? Now, there are many things we could discuss more about that. Can we get our young people to serve, but not just in ways, it's performance on the stage? Can we get them to serve in ways according to their gifts? Now, this is all time-consuming and difficult. In other words, it's messy to get a 16-year-old teaching a class of 8-year-olds because you need a trainer and you need safeguards in place. And that's why we need team leaders and leaders, and that all takes time. But also just simply picking the people who are more lonely and inviting them to get to know in the right context, you know, involving them in family life. That answer is so inadequate, because it's really saying, it is the same question as how do we convince anyone that church is a network? So one answer is, if you're a smaller church with fewer young people, you are in some ways, it's an advantage, because everyone in the church knows the name of the one 16-year-old in the church. And everyone is willing to talk to that 16-year-old. Now that thinking, the statistics say that thinking shouldn't change if your youth group is 50. If your youth group is 50, it's tempting to think they're cool, they hang out together, they're desperate for authenticity, truth, love, care that the whole church can provide. But it's because we're intimidated by 50 young people. We're less intimidated by one. We'll go on. Yes, last one.
If you're in the fortunate position of having a mothers and toddlers group where people are dipping their toe into church life,
yes,
the parents are likely to be very, very inexperienced in things of the Christian faith. They might not even be Christians themselves.
Yes.
So this idea, if you have them for 1 hour, they have them for the whole week.
Yes.
How do you structure your church to help those parents?
How do you structure church life to help those preschool parents who may not even be Christians to raise their children to know Christ? The first answer is normality. We just spread that feeling around our church that family life is normal. Jesus Christ is at the middle. Here are 5 CDs with weird Americans, Australians and English people singing songs that will get in your head and never leave. Buy one today, play it in your car on eternal loop. Your kids will sing about Jesus for the rest of your days. Pray before you go to bed. All the normal patterns that maybe you grew up with. So firstly, don't intimidate it. Don't set the bar high. Don't give the impression that we all need to be wearing suits to open the Bible around the kitchen table and my children sit there for 20 minutes and don't blink and know every answer to the question. You set the bar at, to know Jesus is normal. And if you talk to your children about strawberries, you talk to them about Jesus. You give them a CD. You preach how to love their neighbour as well as love their children. You give them some help with discipline. As Jesus disciplines people, as church disciplines members, parents discipline children. In some ways, to ask the question is to think there is an answer. And all parents, my ministry is to say every parent in the church head feels guilty and tired. Be very careful what you say to them. because I didn't have children and I needed to be told that. So if the starting point is all parents wish they were doing a better job, we need to be very careful the first thing we say to them to do start doing. Whereas to say, you're in church, you are winning. Please don't leave this church. Your children are in the best possible place they can be, and you are surrounded by such godly, wonderful role models. They'll not find this anywhere else. And the statistics say, sadly, they really won't find this anywhere else. So if you are a family in church, you have made the best decision of your life. Stick here, your children have a chance. Well done. Okay, I'm now going to run through each stage and just say the beginnings of an answer about what we might be thinking. Preschool, primary school, secondary school. Each of them, I've given a point about at home, at church, and reaching out into our communities. This is just scratching the surface. At home, this is a stage when worldviews are being built. Rich opportunities for building Christian foundations. Exactly the question we were just asked. We encourage our parents to pray before bed and pray before meals and to thank God each morning. We pray on the way to church. Your children are watching. When do you open your Bible? When do you pray? What takes a priority over church? Our under fives are learning that. Encourage our parents. A learning focus. These learning focus of each one I get from Paul Tripp, who I think is really good on stuff. But I don't give his books to many parents because they're at a high level. He says, learning focus for preschoolers, authority and love. At home, can parents convince their children they are under their authority? If they understand the principal basis of authority, submission, they'll get God. Authority, submission. Secondly, do they get love? Unconditional Christian love. The love never ends. You can never be outside of my love. You'll never leave this family. You'll be loved forever in this family. That's the story of God's family. Authority and love, preschoolers. That is happening in every family, basically, that's functioning. So we're just saying that is what we teach them. At church, parents are often in need of support. They're often in need of support. So I think it's just simply inviting people who have been parents to come into their lives and talk to them. Someone said to me, Ed, in every creche, we just need an older mum. Do we? Yeah, we do. Right. I said, I need three mums to do three Sundays, and then we go round. I asked for three mums. I got more than I needed. In other words, when you ask a mum of a 10-year-old, would anyone like to be around in creche to talk to a mum of a 1-year-old, they go, boy, they really need that. I'll be in the room with them. In other words, godly mums know what it's like to be in the creche stage and know that, weirdly, creche is a place where you can have longer to talk and ask how you are and get a real answer than you do over coffee or you do during the week or you do on a phone. So are there just normal ways we can invite our older godly saints to get alongside the preschoolers and say, talk. Talk about life. Talk about... Just say, we were in chaos when we were at yours. You know, you're dressed. Well done. Huge success. You're winning for Jesus. In the community, it's a rich opportunity for evangelism as friendship networks and routines are being built. So to say to the parents of our preschoolers, you will never have an opportunity again to make as many friends as you will over the next 3 years. Make those friendships for Christ. You are talking, but men talk to the man there as they push their kids on the swing. You'll never talk to a stranger again in your life. You're English. That doesn't happen. You're going to talk to a strange man for 10 minutes next to the swings. He could become a friend. You'll have a beer with him and you'll watch football. Use that for Jesus. You need to invite that man to church and say, your family are stuffed without church. I don't know how you're going to do it. Toddler groups. Just one thing to say. I have been struck by other people doing it well, that a toddler group in some ways is harder to get spiritual fruit from than a course. So we had a mum in our church who understood something of music. So she ran a termly 10-week music group for carers and toddlers. We're in a very middle-class area. That might be normal there. But there's an equivalent to football, and there's an equivalent to dance, and there's an equivalent to craft, which is you sign up for 10 weeks. You have to come because you've paid and you're on a course, and that's what people do. And you have three or four other Christians, and therefore you know who you're going to get each week. You know you're going to get them for 10 weeks. You're probably going to get them for 30 weeks of the year. You can build friendships because it's normal, because you know you're going to be sat next to them in the room next week. Whereas in a toddler's group, you come with your own friend, you sit in a corner and you avoid the Christians making eye contact with you at all costs. So that's just one tip. On our website, we've got Junior Jivers material, which is a music version of this. Some videos, some documents, some training documents. But just to say, 52% of the preschoolers are coming into our churches. It's a huge headache trying to work out how do we make it spiritually fruitful. That is hard to do. It's not hard to get them into your building. It's very hard to engage with them, build friendships. It is possible. Ministry training for exhausted parents. Consider running a course. By running a course, I mean a godly mum, a godly dad. Just have them in the house before they give birth. You know, the next 3 months, you're not going to know which way's up. Here's three principles for getting by. Primary school years. At home, at church, in the community. At home. Parents are tempted to take a spiritual step back, as we've just discussed. How can we encourage them to step forward? So how can we encourage... This is, in some ways, it gets harder. At preschool years, a CD on the way to school and a one-sentence prayer and a picture Bible, that feels more manageable for parents. This is harder. So for primary school years, it can be harder. The learning focus could be gospel-based godliness. That is... the fruit of the Spirit. For primary school age kids, Jesus was perfect. By his Spirit, those who trust him are made more like Jesus. We're going to talk more about that, kids. In other words, don't punch your brother. Don't just shout share at your kids. They won't. They'll share while you're looking. Then they'll punch their brother when you walk out of the room and take his toy. So we're going to talk about why do you share. Jesus shared. He gave his life. He didn't punch the person who was weaker and take it from him. He gave everything. At church, an army of leaders is needed. And an army of leaders at a slightly higher level than what you were teaching earlier. So normally, you start teaching more of the Bible because they're at school they're learning to sit still, so at church they can learn to sit still, so the Bible gets taught. From 8, you might open a Bible. That probably takes a higher level of training. How can we... talked about that. In the community. This is at school gate evangelism. In exactly the same way, parents, unless they're very switched on, don't realise that they go to the same school gate every day, they go to the same school gate to collect, they meet the same people at the school gate. That's evangelism. If you knew you were going to meet the same people twice a day, every day, for the next 5 years, crumbs, imagine if you were strategic about that. Imagine if we told our parents, this is going to happen to you. Maybe two of you meet up to pray once a month. Maybe three of you get together and get to know three other people. I don't know. Maybe even we tell each other how to build friendships. Get the name in your mobile phone. Drop them a text once a week. Ask to meet them in their house for a coffee, because meeting in your house is kind of weird. Arrange to meet them in the park. Outdoors is less weird. How can your husbands meet each other? How can your wives meet each other? When could you get them round for a meal? When would you invite them to church for the first time? That's how you build a friendship. Holiday clubs. I just want to say, holiday clubs and much of children's work is hugely labour intensive. So rather than just doing it, work out in our community, with our church, with our resources, what is the easiest way to get fruit? If we already have friendships, maybe we don't need a holiday club. If we don't know any children, maybe we do need a holiday club. But it's tempting just to start big events, which get huge numbers in, but relationships keep people. And you may already have them without your incredibly labour-intensive events. Sustainable models of integrating families into church life. That's just a long way of saying when people walk in for the first time with kids, what's the plan? Tim Keller said, for a family to become part of a church, every single individual member of that family has to actively want to come. The three-year-old has the power to stop the whole family coming to church just by never being settled in creche. So that means when a family of five or six walk into church, you need like an SAS welcoming crew. Right, dad, you're taking the dad. Mum, you're taking the mum. We need an eight-year-old welcomer. We need a six-year-old welcomer. We need a four-year-old welcomer. And we need a ninja mum to go in creche with the two-year-old. Your job is to stop that kid crying for the next 3 weeks. Because mum, when she drops her child in creche, 10 seconds, sweep of the room. This is a safe room. I can drop my child here. 10 seconds, that's all a mum needs to scan a room. I see a leader who's in charge. I see stickers being done. I see a mum who's welcoming. I see a smiling child and I see no crying kids. This is a safe room. To welcome a family of five or six is very difficult. Secondary school years. At home, parents often feel lost. Parents often think they don't know what they're doing and their teens aren't listening to them. Can we get alongside them? So can we get alongside the Christian parents of teenagers and say to them, keep going. You are not lost. You are not failing. You don't know where your son was last night at 10 o'clock. That doesn't mean he's not listening to you. Ask him good questions. Find a way of getting on your own with him. Take him for a coffee. Keep talking, keep talking, keep listening, keep asking questions. It's different to when he was 12, it's different to when he was 8, but he's still listening to you and he still wants to be heard. Learning focus, living out independent faith. By 13 years old, the spiritual framework is built. So over 13, they're asking, does it work? Can I do this? At church, plausible support structures. They're very aware of peer groups. They're looking for a support structure, which might not necessarily mean a huge youth group. But it could mean a network of people who are going to care for them. And he walks in. I heard a story about a youth group where an elderly lady said, could I come along and do puzzles? The youth worker said, yeah. She started doing puzzles in the corner. After 4 weeks, her table was full of people. In the end, they had to shut down the football and have tables of puzzles with elderly people doing puzzles. Because every young person wanted to talk to an elderly person and do puzzles. Because the elderly person had time for them, they listened to them, they loved them, and they were so wise. That's not made up. That happened. Plausible support structures. Authentic relationships. Care. Asking questions. It takes, you know, African proverb, it takes a village to raise a child. Christian proverb, it takes a church to raise a child. So, one study said, you think about a ratio of 1 to 6, we need 6 to 1. Every person, every child and young person needs 6 people to be caring for them in the church. Just tell a parent that. A flippant remark off the side from a sermon. Are there 6 people your child can trust in the teenage years? If there aren't, just invite the same person to lunch for the next 3 Sundays. That'll be a good start. If your child is in a situation, your 16-year-old, your 14-year-old is in a situation and you're struggling to speak into it because it's bad, this is going to end up with you praying. I know it is. Can someone else have the conversation? Can someone else come in? You don't have to tell them what to say because the joy of the Spirit is He is at work in godly Christians to give wise, understanding care without you being in the room. A plausible network of support. What does it look like for our teenagers to be full members of the church family? At aged 18, they might drop off the end of the conveyor belt of youth work. And will they run off the conveyor belt and say, I know how to be a church member. I know what it looks like and I'm ready. I'm so excited. So for instance, if that's the first time they're expected to sit through an adult sermon, that's quite a shock to the system. If it's the first time they're expected to go to home group each week, that's a shock to the system. If it's the first time they're going to be asked to serve. We're almost there. One-to-ones with stable partners, don't be limited by age. I just heard a story last Sunday. A girl of 15 was having an awful time at school. She was being humiliated for being a Christian. She'd allowed one friend into her Christian life. That friend had turned on her and decided to tell everyone what their weird Christian life looked like. She was having an awful time. There was a young woman in the congregation who she just thought was a beautiful, godly woman. So they had one-to-ones. They were meeting up regularly, a huge source of support for this 14-year-old. That young woman left the church. Her parents were still there. Her mum of 50 was still there. The daughter said, can I read the Bible with her? In other words, it's now normal for me to read the Bible. That 50-year-old cares for me. So she's still reading the Bible with that 50-year-old. She wouldn't swap her for anything in the world. Stable support structures are not limited by age. In the community, the young people are now the evangelists. They do the evangelism on their own, or they don't. But the parents can't do it for them anymore. The parents can't even partner with them in it. How can we support them? How could we support our youth group to to take their first absolutely terrifying steps into evangelism. Could you imagine that? Two teenagers being asked to do evangelism. They don't know anyone in their school who's a Christian. I mean, that is absolutely terrifying. What could we as a church do to make that first step simpler? What could we put in place? Who could we give them? Knowing that the first steps are very risky and probably won't work very well. How can they be encouraged to show leadership? I went on a summer camp with 15s to 18s. I normally do the 11s to 14s. I was really struck on this 15s to 18s camps that the young people were clearly leaders. The 14-year-olds really looked at the 17 to 18-year-olds more than they looked at the leaders. The 17 and 18-year-olds are saying, we need to pray because we've just our youth workers left, our church are appointing the next one, we need to pray we get the right one. I just found that inspirational. They are spiritually tuned in. The young people know who the leaders are. They know who they're going to follow. Even if you've got distracting older ones, this is the guy I want to be like. This is the girl I want to be like. I just thought that is just the result of simply very godly churches doing a great work over a long time in the lives of these teenagers. It takes a long time. You don't grow a youth work and make a godly youth work. You might often just start with your four-year-olds and wait 20 years. But in heaven, when the 18-year-old is there, in eternity, you'll understand why you did crash with them. You'll understand why you cleared it up. You'll understand why you stayed in their life the whole time. Okay, we are done. You turn to your neighbour. I've just put two questions for discussion. What is the one opportunity you have to develop in line with your church's vision? You don't do what Ed says. You don't do what the new book says. You look at your church's vision, the place you are heading towards, the place you have agreed as a church family you're heading towards. What is the one idea? What is the one place to develop our children's and youth work? Who do you have who can lead this development with your help? Because you're like parents and you feel tired and guilty all the time. Who is the one person who doesn't feel tired and guilty? Who has some gifting and has the godliness and the faithfulness to continue with it? So if you leave with another ministry, today has failed. But if you lead with a clearer vision and the desire to train two or three people to be trainers of others, leaders of others. Turn in your groups for 5 minutes. See where you get to. One idea. Off you go. Questions, thoughts, reflections? Yes. I do first want to say love and creativity gets you a huge way, and that's what you've just shown in what you're doing. So the question was all age services, keeping children in the service, keeping youth in the service all the time. So you've just expressed love and creativity. That is, I love my young people and my families enough to want them to hear God's word and to be part of God's family. On occasion, a lot of the time, all the time. And I'm willing to be creative, and my congregation are willing to love them enough to change our routines to reflect the changes in our congregation or our desire to change. So if you have love for your people and creativity, that is the best place to start in answering that question. A few ideas would be all age services are very hard to do and normally no one enjoys them. The parents wish their children weren't the worst behaved in the church. The people without children avoid them. The people with children avoid them. It's just you doing an all age service has taken you weeks to prepare. But I was hearing a story earlier of everyone is in for the start and then they take out the under fives and their parents to another building to do all-age service just for the under-fives and their parents. So it's chaos. But it's reflecting, we love you enough, we're going to work out what church looks like. And then they have a service for the over-sevens, and the preacher has to do less to engage them. You know, what an amazingly creative idea that is. So I'd say all-age services are difficult, but they do reflect something, particularly if they're genuinely all-age, so those without children feel like the Bible talk is still for them. And the other goal I said was at the age of 18, wouldn't it be great if our 18-year-olds felt like they belonged? So some element of at some age there is a transition into church at a service or something. I mean, I'm trying to give you some round the edge of the pitch boundaries, but I do want to encourage you that what you're doing sounds brilliant. Anyone else got any reflections on that? All age services or all in or something like that? Dangers, encouragements?
Can I just share something that we've been led to do? And that is during the morning meeting, we're speaking to those children.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I might say to two dads on the way in, can you ask me a question during question time? A, you're going to have to listen to my sermon. B, I want the kids to see you don't know all the answers. I might say to a 16-year-old, please ask me a question today. Our 12-year-olds aren't asking questions. They need to see that you can. You know, but what a brilliant idea. Question time, and how brave of you. They could ask you absolutely anything, and I bet some really want to. Brilliant. Great. Next. Yes. I mean, brilliant. I mean, I would. You're touching on something fundamentally, which is how can a church leader comment, train, improve if they've never seen it? I think that is a pretty big issue. The fundamental part of training, I think, it might be, you watch me do it once, I'll explain how I did it, I'll watch you do it once, I'll give you feedback, and off we go. So I think as a basis, you know, your model of you might once do Sunday school. Or you will sit in when you think the best person in the church does Sunday school. And you'll talk to that person about the five encouragements you've seen and the one thing they could improve on. And then you say, can I sit in on your training with them? Because I think you probably lack the confidence to train five other people, but you're really good at this. I'm going to sit in the room to give you the confidence and to say to them, this person's really good. But you don't then need to be in it forever because you've given them an endorsement, you've checked you're on the right track, you check in a year's time. But that sort of thinking of, in my role as senior minister, where I am over it, how do I light touch, set it in the right direction, check it's going, train others to keep it going? You know, what brilliant, just brilliant thinking that we, that must, great, stop. Yes. How is there a whole church ownership in the raising up of our kids? It's a very difficult question, but I do think if you imagine, let's imagine your church can be split into two: those who want to play an active part in raising up our young people, and those who don't. You know, this group who want to, first of all, can we say to them, please do. And here are five different ways you can do it. One of them is teaching the Bible in youth and kids work. Four of them aren't. So to say to those who are keen to, can I invite you into the lives of our families? Can I interview a mum or a dad who has benefited from someone else coming into their... Like coming in, you know what I mean? Loving them, talking to them, saying, wow, your family's in meltdown, that's totally normal. And so I do think... So to first of all say to those who want to be involved, let's talk together about how you could be and let's throw the net really wide. Because as we all know, we grow when we serve far more than when we are served. So to get the chance to serve in any way, whether it is cutting out craft on a Monday for the coming Sunday, I knew a bloke who would open all the Bibles and put the bookmark in them for the 8s to 11s group. That was his way of serving. And he got a card every year written by the kids to thank him for it. So, you know, that sort of thinking. And then those who don't want to serve, that's where God's work does power. To say we as a church have responsibility for each other in our entirety, including our two-year-olds. Let me just finish with a few slides I forgot. This is for teenagers to encourage you. Based on all recipients who believe in God, a God, would you consider yourself a follower of Jesus? You follow all teenagers in the country who said, I believe in God or a God. 59% consider themselves a follower of Jesus and the Christian faith. 19% specifically identify themselves as followers of Jesus. This survey has become quite famous because they did it again because they didn't believe their results. It basically said young people are thinking of themselves as Christians and young people want to be Christians. But just no one is talking to them. How do they even get that far? How do so many people think they're followers of Jesus and yet none of them are in church? I don't know, but they're not dead to the gospel. Teenagers, who or what influences the way you think about faith or religion? The massive circle says 73% family. We've looked at that. Those are two slides to say our teenagers are ready to hear of Christ. in the home and at church. A few last things. This is the Faith in Kids website. Faith in Kids is an independent charity. Two of us get our salary from Faith in Kids. We exist. We're a year and a half in. If you could, by prayer, encouragement or finance, help us to exist, that'd be amazing. This website has some things on it. You can find your way around, or maybe direct parents to the blog or some article or other. I've been invited to oversee the three children's programs at Bible by the Beach. So maybe some of your leaders want to join our team. I'm taking responsibility for the team leaders. I'm going to try and ensure they are training their leaders properly and the best possible materials and the best possible weekend. That is in Eastbourne, which is in Sussex. I just thought I'd tell you that. If that is an opportunity for your church, you want to chat to me afterwards. I know there are many of you in here who have far more significant roles at this than I do, but I'd be love to see any of your team. The big day out, I run at those five crosses in the country. So London, Exeter, Cardiff, Birmingham, Hull. One of your number is here. It's lovely to see you. This is a place for those who are involved in leading children's work. Team leaders oversee the ministry. Some curates come. We meet once a term for a day in each of those places. So that might be where you see what we're discussing. We're trying to do the practical stuff and working it through. We have launched two podcasts to go with a book, Faith in Parents. I don't really know what a podcast is, but apparently they're big. So if you know people who listen to podcasts, this one is for parents. On each of these, I do one of the studies from the Wonder of Easter with a different group of children. So the idea is the author of this, who thinks he's an expert, is in chaos with a different group of children each week, because that's what the Bible time is. It's chaos with a Bible open, and we talk about Jesus a bit more than normal. And then we pray at the end that it's wildly encouraging. And talk a bit about parenting. And there's a Faith in Kids one. Today, the fourth episode is released of each. We have no idea if they're any good. Almost no one listens to them. We might stop if someone doesn't tell us if they're good or not. I think that might be the end. I've told you a lot about a book. I'll stop there. Great. Thank you.